Hello and welcome to an episode of the Untimed podcast. Today I'm joined with Laura. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me. For those of you that don't know, Laura is the ECD of AMV BBDO. Loads of letters, but they do have important meaning. But yeah, how are you doing? Thanks for joining me.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very good.
Yeah, good. Can't wait. I always like to start with this or that. I think it's quite nice and they usually yield really fun answers. So you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Skill or fame?
Ooh, skill.
Ambition or comfort?
Ambition.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Thank God. I always worry when people say cats.
And they, me too. Oh,
I do like them, but
no, I mean, I love cats. I have a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
My dog's probably watching this, so I have to say
that. Winter or summer?
Ooh, winter. I'm Canadian.
Yeah, okay, fine. films or books?
That's a hard one. I would love to say books, but I have to say films.
Intuition or insights?
More and more intuition.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Photos or videos?
Photos.
Progressive or innovative?
Innovative.
Leading or doing?
Leading.
Chocolate or crisps?
Crisps.
I feel like that's the most important one.
It absolutely is. And that's another one that's changed. I think when when I was younger, I used to really like have such a sweet tooth. Mm. But now I can't, like, if a bag of crisps is open, it's over.
Yeah.
The whole thing is gone.
The share bag concept to me is hilarious in the sense of who's sharing that?
Yeah, exactly.
With? Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to eat the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Every time.
Yes.
And feel like accomplished in doing so.
Yes. Yes. I can't be stopped.
I think same. I think everyone can probably relate to that in some way. But thank you so much for joining us. I'm like super excited to get into chatting with you. And the first question that we always ask on this is, who is the first person to make you feel talented?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question because I know you ask it. And it took me a little while to come to that answer because I think actually it was quite a while into my time working in the industry that I actually felt like, oh yeah, I think I can do this. Mm. And there are two moments that stand out to me in my early career. And I don't know which one came first, but I had a early like interest, and I'd like to say talent, in writing radio. I just really kind of, as a young copywriter, I felt like I got into a bit of a groove with that. That was the first thing that I, you know, really was able to. I think I got a lot of radio briefs because mm-hmm. that's what you did with young writers at that time. They just wrote radio all the time, and I actually found like, oh, I think I can do this. And then one of the other senior writers in the department said to me, oh, when you get put on a brief with me, I know I have to bring my A game. And I was like, what? Me? Who? And I was just, you know, I was just so junior at the time to think that somebody who had been working for, you know, a while, and they were probably being nice to me and probably trying to encourage me, which is also lovely. And then there's another moment kind of around that period where I was recording a radio script and the actor who was performing the whatever it was who's doing the spot, mm-hmm. came out of the booth afterwards and said to me, did you write that? And I was like, yeah. And she said to me, she goes, oh, it was really good. You should write a play.
No way.
I was like, really? I've never written a play, but I've always remembered that somebody out there thinks I should write a play. So that was, those are like just two moments that pop out to me as moments that made me feel like, oh, maybe there's a place for me here.
Yeah, I like that because they're also... they were kind of not indirect compliments, but also not sort of targeted solely to like one specific thing. It's like, oh, every time I need to come, you're on a brief with me, I have to bring my A game. It's
yeah.
like, that means it's a repeat thing that someone's seen in you, which
yeah.
I think is even more reassuring of, oh, it's not just like a flash in the pan moment.
I think also it was, made me feel that the thing that I enjoyed doing, I could also be good at.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that the way to get the best work out is to actually be doing it from a place of joy and fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like a really, well, that's a lesson I've had to learn about 100 times. But it was one of the first examples of like, actually, like when I get into that zone, when I'm really like enjoying it, making myself laugh, like feeling, having fun with it. And a lot of creatives will roll their eyes because it's the classic thing for a creative director to be like, just have fun with it. And you're like melting. You're like, how do I have fun? But actually it's like, it is true. As soon as you start having fun with it, that's when the good stuff comes. And that's one of the first moments that I felt that.
Amazing. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for sharing that. And then can you tell us more about your like start into the industry, how you got started, what that journey looked like for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be in advertising. I spent most of my high school time and going into university thinking I was supposed to go to law school. Okay. Because my dad's a lawyer, my grandfather's a lawyer, my family is very sort of in that sort of professional world. Mm. And they were always like that, you know, they were like, you're very argumentative.
Yeah, you'd be good at this.
You'd be good at this. And so I just kind of accepted that and sort of following that path. And then I was really lucky because my dad was able to have me come to his he was a lawyer at a law firm. He had me come in the summers and work in the summer at the law firm, and I could not have been more bored.
I was about to say,
absolutely not interested in anything that was going on. I was like, you know, like just thinking about my lunch hour from the moment I arrived. And I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Fortunately, my brother is a lawyer, so we're off the hook now.
Nice. He's taken that on.
He's brilliant at it, by the way. He's the one that always should have been doing that. It just, you know, it actually put me into a bit of a tailspin because actually I was like pretty far into my university education thinking that's what I was doing. I was like, oh no, God, like I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life. But then there was a sign up in my university sort of student common area that it was, I clearly remember it. And it was just a picture of a can, an aluminum can, like a Coke can.
Okay.
But it didn't have any branding on it. And the headline on it was something like, if you want to find out what turns this into a can of Coke, be at this place at this time. And the most important bit of it was like, there'll be free pizza. Student, free pizza.
Yeah.
Kind of interested in this Coke can.
10%
Coke can, 90% free pizza. And it was a presentation that was put on by kind of the Canadian equivalent of the IPA.
Okay.
And they were trying to recruit more people who are in university to go into the advertising industry. And I had no idea that these jobs existed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what a creative was. I didn't know there were copywriters and art directors. I just was absolutely not informed at all. And they sort of described this industry. And I was like, it's me. I should be doing that. And I had a chat with they had a creative director from an advertising agency in Toronto who was doing the creative bit. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him afterwards and he sent me information about like there's a portfolio school that's still running in Toronto. It's not that different from the Watford course here.
Okay,
it's essentially like a 1-year program where they sort of whip you into shape and send you out into the industry and hope for the best. But there's an incredible mentor network as well. Everybody in the Canadian advertising, not everybody, but many people have come up through that that program.
Nice.
So there's a great network and loads of especially writers have come up through that program. So that's how I got started, really kind of accidentally. And I started at an agency called Zig. Mm-hmm. Zig was a great independent agency at the time, later got bought out by Crispin Porter, and then, you know, ended up being sort of absorbed into that network. But when I was there, it was an amazing, small, quickly growing agency, very creatively focused. And that was my creative childhood.
I love that story though. And I think it's so increasingly important to educate at those more grassroots levels that advertising is a thing.
Yeah.
Because people just don't know. Yeah. And I had no idea growing up that it was a thing or it's like a whole new sort of world and industry, and then industries off of it. And there's so much more scope for people to actually feel at home with being able to go into doing something rather than, like you sort of said before, I'm doing this because it makes sense because everyone else has sort of done it.
Yeah. And I think as well, like I come from a position of like, you know, I was in a university setting. There's lots of people who are, you know, like looking for career paths, but there's an entire group of people who wouldn't even, even from that point wouldn't have access to that information. And I think in terms of like trying to make the industry more diverse, more accessible, we have to do a better job of just talking about ourselves, because people don't know what it is we do. And we're better when we have a lot of people from different backgrounds in our creative departments, in our agencies. So it's sort of on us, you know, we have to tell people who we are.
Yeah, 100%. And how do you think starting in a smaller sort of independent agency like helped your like early career?
I think that the starting at a small independent, it wasn't so much that it was small, but it was that it was creatively focused.
Okay.
Like, I mean, it was small, but the thing that like stays in my heart is that, you know, we are always trying to make the best creative. And that is something that I've carried with me throughout my entire career. And I feel it when I know when I'm in an agency or in an organization where that's truly what we're all here to do. Mm-hmm. And I haven't always, you know, that doesn't mean that every place, you know, different agencies have slightly different priorities, and I, you know, have a much more sort of, you know, broader point of view. You know, but I feel it when I'm surrounded by people who are truly in it to make amazing work. And that's, you know, people from all, not just the creative department, you know, when you're working with clients who want to make great work, when you're surrounded by, you know, people who are really pushing for the best creative result, that's something that just stayed with me, that you all, that's what we're all here to do.
Yeah, it's so important. And I like increasingly more and more people are wanting to revert back to that and say like it's the term I want to go somewhere that like creative, it is creative first, and there's it like limits so much the blockers to make great creative work when everyone is on that same page.
And I think it's not like creative work at the expense of, you know, effective advertising, great business results. I think that the thing about people who are creatively focused is that they believe, and I at least I believe this, that that is the way to make work that people love and care about. I think that like, if we're going to put stuff out into the world, because we are, it's going out. People are seeing it. Like, it's on us. If people hate advertising, that's our problem. Like, let's make it great. Let's make them love it. I don't think that's impossible.
No, same. So then you spent 8 years working in Toronto, and then you moved over to lovely London to work on Dove at Ogilvy.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that transition from sort of Canada, like where you knew and what you knew, to then coming over to London?
It's funny because like Toronto is quite a small community in terms of the advertising community. Everybody knows each other. And I came here and suddenly it looked like everybody looked like somebody I knew, but I didn't. It was so much bigger, and I still feel like I'm playing catch up, because either, you know, people at my, you know, my level, my peers have been all working together for, you know, 20 some odd years. So there are some people I'm just meeting for the first time. You're always sort of still playing catch up. But the working on Dove was brilliant. At the time, the creative department was really international because we were running the account globally out of London. So there was a real intention of bringing in people from all over the world to work on the account, because we were making work for, you know, North America, all of Europe, India, like everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it made sense to have a lot of people. So we felt like it felt like a bit of an expat community at the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it was quite nice though to sort of come in and be like, we're all in this together.
Yeah,
like,
it felt like a little bit like an arrivals lounge. Yeah. You know, we were like, nobody knows what's going on. So we were sort of in it together. But I do think that like it was important to get beyond that, because I wanted to always make great work for the UK as well, because I think that, you know, some of the best work in the world gets made here.
Yeah.
So as much as I came here as a, you know, to come work on, you know, that a big global account, it was always really important to me to make work that was, you know, seen and loved here, here as well. But there were a few things like initially, that expression that, you know, it's two nations separated by a common language. You don't know what you don't know until you get here. And I thought, like, just naively, that because I spoke the language, it wouldn't be the same as like if I'd gone to Germany or something where there's this huge barrier of just understanding. But like little things, like I remember when I worked on my first TV production, and the producer kept coming to me and saying, "Have you looked at the costing? Have you looked at the costing?" And I was like, "Well, what do you, I was like, do I have to look at costs? Is that how it works here? Am I in charge of the budget? I'm the creative. This is, I was like, oh my God, and you don't even know what you are, what's okay to ask. Mm-hmm. And then of course she was saying casting and I was hearing costing.
That
and
is it's amazing. Just,
it's like such a small thing, but it sent me in total tailspin of being like, I don't even know how to do my job.
Yeah, I can imagine like internally sweating.
Exactly.
Like, I can't ask because I'll look stupid.
Exactly.
But what the hell is she talking about?
Exactly. Exactly. Then I looked at the casting.
Okay. Yeah. And then you were like, oh. I would love to have seen like the relief wash over you when you realized she means casting, not costing. That's so funny. I think like people kind of overlook those like small cultural things too, with like sort of landing into a big city. And I think London's quite a daunting city regardless. And then like those smaller, even navigating where you're going, where do I get this? What is that person saying to me in a funny, like funny accent? It's always strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Understanding accents is, I'm much better at it now, but I remember there was a creative in the department at Ogilvy from Newcastle, and that was the one. I actually spent a lot of time just trying to crack his accent.
So I always like tend to look really closely and I'm like, what? And then it takes a minute for me to transfer like what they've said, which is funny. And then so since Ogilvy, you moved and you obtained leadership positions at CHI and Partners, Adam and Eve, you were at Pablo as well. Can you tell us a bit more about that journey and how you navigated leadership within those roles as well?
Yeah, okay. So the first job I had as a creative director was at CHI, which is now the M Partnership. Yeah. And I mean, that was great to be brought in there. I actually, you know, in this sort of point of view, wanting to be more involved in UK business, I was brought on to look after Argos, to look after British Gas. And I was like, yes, big British accounts, woo. And the thing that happened almost immediately as soon as I worked there was that we had a leadership change from an ECD position. And this is like, even though I've always wanted to, you know, I've always sort of seen like running a creative department is something that I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. The kind of path to get there has always just been like, say yes to things and then figure it out.
Make it.
So as soon as I started there, we had this a leadership change. And at the same time, the M&S pitch was coming in.
Okay.
And I've been at the agency, I think like 3 or 4 weeks. And
I thought you were going to say months.
No, weeks. I was so new. And the pitch is huge, like M&S, like doesn't get better, bigger than that. And we didn't have anybody to run the pitch. And we had interim leadership. Everything was fine. But the clear desire from the agency was, Laura, we want you to run the pitch.
Okay.
And I'd never run a pitch. I'd like worked on pitches, but I'd not run anything of that scale before. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, you just have to say yes to this and then figure it out as you go. And I think that's like kind of a theme, you know, if you just taking things on and then figuring out how to do it. I wished I could say that the end of the story is, and we won the pitch, which we didn't win. Unfortunately, it was at least for me, a really good experience in terms of like how to do that sort of thing and working together and, you know, working at that level. It's just like throwing yourself in and figuring it out.
Yeah, for sure. It's so important. Like to look at that element of it too. Yes, you didn't win it, but what else did you win from that experience?
Yeah. I mean, I see it that way. Yeah. I wonder if the rest of the agency feels that way. I'm sure it would be better if we'd actually won that pitch. But I think, you know, it was definitely a moment for me in my own career.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. And so the first sort of two places were still relatively big network agencies, and then you made the move over to Pablo.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
Well, I thought that Pablo is a really exciting agency, growing, building up from a small number of people to a, you know, and growing in a really exciting way. And I think that's what attracted me to it. You know, mm-hmm. that you asked about how working at a small agency feels and if that's something that's important to me. And I think that is something that attracted me to them. Mm-hmm. And my good friend Dan Watts, who's still there,
of course,
was asked if I'd come over and, you know, get involved. And I loved working with him when we were both at CHI. So that sounded like a brilliant opportunity. And they were at the time, and they still are, really creatively focused and growing quickly. And so I thought, oh, that sounds really good. I want to, you know, like get involved and help grow this agency from, mm-hmm. you know, from that smaller space to something that feels like it's not big, but just, you know, established and taking on its next, taking its next step into the world. Mm-hmm. That was an incredible experience. There's some amazing people over there, but I couldn't say no when AMV knocked on my door and invited me over. So that's how I ended up where I am now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting though to take those different routes and go from the bigger established places that everybody knows, everybody loves, everybody wants to mm-hmm. be at and follow, and then being able to be part of almost like the journey of getting an agency to that point as
exactly.
well. Like there's so many different learnings and experiences of that, and that then you must just feel more rounded in your next step mm-hmm. and where you end up after that.
I mean, every experience is a good experience. You learn something about who you are as a creative and how other people work. Mm-hmm. So I think that was... it was great to be at that agency at that time as well, because mm-hmm. I think there's a kind of a startup feel where everybody's figuring things out and working things out as they go. And like I said, that's sort of how I like to work, just throwing myself in and figuring it out.
Yeah, it was, I think a few years ago, we were working with them, and it was very much talent was sort of saying, who are they?
Yeah.
Like, what do they do? And now you have that conversation. They're like, oh my God, yeah, love them, make amazing work, which is really like great to see and to hear. So you just mentioned obviously now at AMV, you're relatively new into that role, right?
I started the role in October. So I think, I don't know, I think that's 3-4 months, mm-hmm. something like that.
Nice. Tell us more.
Well, it's, it goes back to that thing about finding a place that shares that creative soul and ambition. Mm-hmm. And to me, I started chatting with Nick and Nadj at AMV, and then the wider leadership team, and then meeting more people. And I just felt like this is a group of people that truly share my values, mm-hmm. because the creative ambition runs through and through AMV, but also there's a real sense of, you know, kindness. So it's celebrating the work, caring about the work, but also caring about the people. And those are the two things that are like really I felt it in my bones. I was like, that feels absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And thankfully 3 months in, actually right immediately, I was like, I cannot believe how lovely this group of people are. And so good too.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Like you sometimes think that in order to be great, you have to be a bit ruthless, or maybe there's maybe there are ideas about that. Maybe that's a bit outdated, but certainly this industry does have has that halo around it. You know, you have to be great. You have to be brutal. You have to be, you know, maybe a bit savage, a bit competitive. I think that it's not about not being competitive, but it's about doing it, you know, with compassion and empathy and kindness and knowing what you want, but also not sacrificing people or their well-being to get there.
Yeah, and I think it is something that is still felt, and like you have to be a certain way to succeed, and you have to like work in a certain way, and you have to be working all hours and like workhorse, all of that side. And I don't get why that is still a thing, because everything has improved so much around that. To still have that culture and believe in that culture feels really strange, but it seems to be the way for some reason.
I think that the that thought about working from a place of like joy and fun is really important to me and how I work. I think that I just know it from myself. Like if I'm panicking, if I'm worried, if I'm operating from a place of fear, what I produce is not as good.
Yeah.
So now I see sort of my job as, how do I try to create an environment where everybody gets to that fear, that panic, that whether it's about deadlines or whether it's about not feeling good enough, what can I do to lift that so that people can work in a way that they're feeling that joy? Because I do think that that's where things get really good. I don't think it's good when you're worried about what somebody else is doing, or you're worried that it's not going to be good enough, or it's not going to be as good as the last campaign. Mm. It's about finding that flow where you're feeling like you're having fun and you're enjoying it. And that's when the good stuff comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that there is a sort of lack of fun in the industry over recent years?
I think that, like, okay, so it's always been an industry that we likes to have fun. You know, there's never been a shortage of, trips to the pub and awards dues and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, people like to have fun. But I think what you're saying, and I think it is true, the focus on making our days more fun. And I'm not talking about ping pong tables in the office.
God, no.
That's fine. Have that. But that's not what I mean. I mean approaching the work with a sense of playfulness and joy. That to me is what I want that more than I want a foosball table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree. I think that we've seen a lot and heard a lot about a lot of creative leaders saying that they want 2024 to be the year of fun again, and actually being able to do really smart comedic work.
Yeah.
It seems like there's been such a lack of it in the past few years, and I think with everything, people just need hope. People need something entertaining and need something enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that everyone who's saying it is actually going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I want this year to be the year of funny.
I want that to be the year. I want it to be the year of, well, fun and funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of those things.
But I mean, they kind of go together, which is good. So, and then a lot of your work has been awarded, highly awarded, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think I always asking people, what has been a specific campaign or project or piece of work that you really loved? Mm. And it's, regardless of awards or that side of it, has there been a piece in your career that you've just held sort of close that you love the outcome of or the process of?
Yeah. Well, this is one of the pieces that I've had that has been more awarded, but it's the process of making it was so powerful for me. So I made a piece of work a number of years ago called Breathless Choir.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of this this piece of work was that we were trying to shift the focus for Philips. We were trying to shift the focus onto their healthcare side of their business. They'd long been known for great television, sound equipment, et cetera, but they have this incredibly robust healthcare side of their business. And we were elevating that side of it and bringing it into the world of advertising, because people didn't really know a lot about it. So what we did is we had a group of people with breathing difficulties, and we taught them to sing. And we did this over a number of days. We shot it in this incredible old church in Harlem in New York.
Mm-hmm.
We did it with Gareth Malone, who's a choir master. And so all of this is sort of sounds purpose advertising, emotional advertising. But the way we made it was real. And I hope that shows up in the film, but the reason that it is so close to me is that I sat there and watched this entire experience that this group of people went through,
mm-hmm.
and so did everybody in the production. So it actually was a genuine transformation for the group of people who were learning to sing, and we followed it wasn't one of these situations where we had some sort of, more contrived style of documentary filmmaking. We sat there for a week, and we were on sort of this, the whole crew was on, hidden behind a wall while this group of people were going through entire days of learning. And of course, we collapsed it all down to a 2-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
But the experience for this group of people was actually, 5 days of learning to sing and then a performance at the Apollo. And for them, that was it really was a transformative moment in their lives. And it was so powerful for us working on it. We had crew, grips, sparks, people who their job is to not get emotionally invested in what we're producing, just technically support the production, who are watching the monitors and everybody sort of crying as these people are having these really important moments in their lives. And there's a particular woman in the film, her name's Claire Wineland, and she's since passed away. She was an amazing young woman who had cystic fibrosis, and she really kind of, a lot of the film was anchored around her, and she was such an incredible human being. Mm-hmm. And interacting with her also off camera, and just her entire outset and, you know, approach to life was so beautiful and wonderful. I just feel so lucky to have been there for that yeah. process. So the process of making that film was really different to anything else I've made. Mm-hmm. And it really felt genuine. And I think we all felt it when we were making it. So I've never had that. I've never had that since. Yeah. We've made lots of other films where everything's, either beautiful, powerful, emotional. But that was a time where it was really authentic.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it.
It's amazing. And it's so easy to not consider everything that goes into that 2 minutes that you're watching.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to just sort of see it as face value and not realize like the journey and everything that was put into a part of that as yeah. well, which yeah. is the bit that you take with you. And yeah, I always love asking that question because we would never get access to that unless yeah. it is asked and spoken about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then in 2018, you founded She Takes Over, which is an initiative raising sort of awareness and profiles of women within the industry. Mm. Yeah, please tell us more about it. We'd love to understand more.
So She Takes Over was a response to a desire to do something for International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. I was personally like a little bit frustrated that a lot of stuff that gets done around International Women's Day is a bit of a PR moment
yeah.
and doesn't have a lot of substance. And I think that's less, thankfully, less the case now than it was in 2018. Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. But at the time I was like, I want to do something that genuinely makes a difference for women in the creative industries. Mm-hmm. And so I had the full support. I was working at Adam and Eve at the time, and the group there rallied behind this idea.
Amazing.
To use our social channels to elevate the profile of all sorts of women in various creative industries, from directors, composers, illustrators, photographers. And we felt that, we have a following. So mm-hmm. let's just use our following and our own, let's use our social media following and just use it to cast a light onto all of these amazing people. But then it started to snowball. And amazing. That's where it got interesting, because it became something that we were like, actually, well, what if we all did this? What if more agencies got involved? And lots of other agencies came on board. And then Clear Channel came on board and said, we've got media space, we'll use it. And then we ended up with this quite, robust program of, media space that mm-hmm. we were just able to use to highlight the talent of women. And it's, the program has since expanded. It's not just women, it's people from all sorts of diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And it's grown every single year.
Amazing.
It's something that I loved doing it too, because we all got together and curated it. Mm-hmm. So that we had all these submissions coming in from people all over the world, and we got to spend time just looking at amazing photography, beautiful illustration, incredible films.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great, you don't get to spend time just looking at great work as much as you would like to.
Mm-hmm.
And this just gave us moments to focus on that. So
yeah.
I love doing that. I thought it was great. And it's, it just felt like this is something that could genuinely transform the lives of the people that we're featuring. And some people had their work, on billboards and out there in the world for the first time.
Yeah, amazing.
And I was like, I would love to be that person who looks up and says, I shot that.
Yeah. So good. And
yeah.
it's so important to, like you said, be able to utilize the platform mm-hmm. for those reasons. I think it's can often be sort of overlooked of like what is already established and what can be utilized in that,
mm-hmm.
Rather than seeing everything as a, not like a massive challenge, but it's the next hurdle to overface. If,
yeah.
well, we don't have a following or we don't already have a platform, it's like, look and utilize what you have.
Yeah.
And be able to make a difference with that too. Even if, like you said, it's someone seeing their work on the billboard for the first time. It's so empowering and it's so important for those people.
Exactly. Exactly.
It must have been really, must have been felt mad when everything started snowballing and you're like, wait a minute, this is actually going to be a thing.
Oh yeah, because it really just said, we were just like, we'll just use our social channels, and then yeah, it mushroomed.
Yeah. We've spoken about funny and comedy a lot. Mm. You spend a lot of your free time doing comedy writing.
I do.
Improv. Mm. Yeah, I'm so intrigued to learn more.
Yeah, so that's my that's my not so secret.
Sorry if I've just outed
it. It totally outed me as one of those people. I just think that it is so core to like how I find creative joy.
Yeah.
There's a with when we were there's so much, I think. You know, I feel it all the time. So much pressure, so much scale to what we do as an industry. And, we're working with big clients, big budgets, and there's a lot of intensity. And it's so important to me to have something that is, first of all, just mine, that I can do what I want with, but also that operates completely in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. So, the amateur comedy scene is really just like people trying stuff out, doing things, trying, failing, trying again. And it's so good to be reminded that actually, like, sometimes you try something and it's brilliant. Sometimes you try something and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's fine. Like, the world does not collapse. Mm-hmm. When I compare that to my job, where I feel that, the pressure to not make a mistake, it's really nice to be in a place where the freedom to fail is, the freedom, the bar to failure is really like, it's cool. It doesn't matter. And then I think also like improv as well is the same sort of thing. Like, we have this, it's the perfect counterpoint to our industry, because, we spend so much time with so many people getting things right, working through every detail, like really nailing it. Whereas, when you're doing improv with, it happens, it's over, you move on. And you really learn about like how subjective comedy is too, which is such a good reminder, because, some people are like, that's funny, it's not funny. Well, that's such a scale. It's so fluid. I did this thing where, I was doing a little experiment about I wrote like a 5-minute set and did the same thing for 10 shows in a row. Okay. Exactly the same verbatim. And that's not that unusual. Loads of comedians do that. But I have this habit of when I write something, I like tinker with it and I tinker with it and I tinker with it. And so I didn't have like a baseline to see, okay, like, is this funny? Is it not funny? And the thing that I learned from it is, sometimes it's funny and sometimes it's not. So it's so much has to do with who you're performing in front of, who you come on before, who you come on after.
Yeah, that's
the
so
context
true.
Is so important. The people. So it just was such a great reminder that actually, like, there's, good and bad is not really a thing. It's just about choices. And I think it's really good to just kind of come back to that on a regular basis, because you can very easily get really wrapped up in the scale and intensity of the the advertising world, and having something that counteracts that in a really like lovely and fun way is it completely nourishes me.
Yeah, it's so nice, and it's like alleviating any sort of element of pressure and responsibility too, but still doing it in an outlet that you're like getting something back from it and enjoying that. And I think it's so important to have something for you, which is kind of overlooked.
The other thing as well with like writing specifically, it's like because I've spent time now like working on comedy writing and working on it with other people and collaborating, I have language for things that I didn't have before.
Interesting.
Which I think is me, I think it's made it easier for me to communicate with people in creative departments, being like really specific about, this is why a script might be working, what needs to change to, escalate or, add more tension or, having words to express myself about writing.
Yeah.
Because the way we learn in advertising is very sort of, on the job as you go. But when you start to really get into kind of comedy writing and like you can like learn it, and having those words to express yourself is so helpful in advertising, because a lot of my job is giving feedback, so I can be
so
like more
true.
precise. I think I can be more precise.
It's like So interesting you mentioned that. Literally yesterday, I had a call and I brought my colleague on. And I was talking with someone in advertising. Mm-hmm. She specializes more in design. So yeah. Obviously the lingo was quite advertising. Mm-hmm. And they were asking me about an art director, someone who could maybe do design as well. And I said, oh, I don't really know if that person's got design chops. Like, in conversation, she called me after. She's like, Molly, I just had to Google what that meant and what you were talking about. And I was like, what? She's like, well, chops. And I'm like, well, it's not really a thing. It's just like a thing that you say. And she'd like got herself into this massive spiral of being like, I have no idea what they're talking about. And
yeah.
It's so funny how easily that happens. And yeah. I would have never have thought anything of it. And no one else on the call would, because yeah. we're all having conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. And I like speaking to friends not in the industry, or to my parents especially, they're like, what on earth are you talking about?
I know.
Like, a lot of the time, which is so hilarious, because you would just never think anything of it in yeah. a different environment.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me think about like I'm on an improv team with a few teams, and I'm on a team with a group of people who all come from different professions. Mm. And it's also just really good to be doing creative things with people who are not in advertising.
Yeah.
Like one of my teammates he's one of the UK's top scientists.
Amazing.
I know, right? Like, what a brilliant thing. And then another person is a children's writer. Another person is a filmmaker. So we just like get together and have this little network of incredible people who are all like creatively incredible, but come at it from like yeah. so many different, like with a totally different brain. And that's just like so amazing. It just feeds you.
Yeah. And it's so refreshing. Yeah. So I think when you're in an industry that is quite all encompassing, you end up socializing in the industry. Mm. Your friends are from the industry. Like, it just all your conversations revert back to one thing.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
It's like, oh my God, how am I ever going to escape this? So yeah, I think it's cool to have that nourishment, even from just different types of people that you would never usually encounter.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Okay, big question. Not a big question, but an interesting one. Mm. How do you think agencies will differentiate themselves in the future to stand out?
Interesting question. I think that, do you mean differentiate themselves from other agencies?
Yeah.
Well, I think that what we were saying earlier about coming back to a sense of, I mean, you mentioned humor, but I think it's craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that and I think this is something that, you know, I hope that we're doing at AMV, and I do believe we're doing at AMV, really focusing on the craft of the work. So having work that is just brilliantly made.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is something that is something that we as an agency can offer that, well, I think not some other agencies might not be as focused on.
Yeah.
So that feels like something that can differentiate agencies. I also think that there's a way of working, and this comes back to that idea of kindness. Mm-hmm. And that idea of being nice to work with. I don't think that, so I think if you are great, but also really lovely to work with, that's important. I don't think, you know, this is 2024. We don't want to work with people who have huge egos and think that they're always right.
Yeah.
I increasingly hear from clients that they want to work with people who are collaborative and that listen and mm-hmm. bring people in. And that's, I think, the modern way of working. So I think if you can have that mindset, but also be, you know, brilliant at your craft.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot.
I think it's going to be hopefully the year of like being just more human first.
Yeah.
And like you said with AMV, when you meet people and you find your people and you're all like aligned with the same craft and you're all aligned with how you speak to one another, how you work with one another.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is so important now. And we see it more and more with people searching
right.
for new opportunities, that
of
it's
course.
So much higher on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, I think years ago there was a kind of excuse of, well, that doesn't matter if I get to make the best career of my life,
yeah.
the best work of my career.
Mm-hmm.
When actually now people are like, wait, I don't have to sacrifice the nicety and like actually enjoy my environment to make good work.
Yeah.
Which hopefully that stays.
Yeah. I think values are so high up on people's lists now.
Yeah.
And finding places that really align to that. And I think, you know, from an agency point of view too, like I want to work with people who I'm going to bring people in who have that same feeling, that really just like love the work and love the people that they're making the work with.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
It's what I look for as well in like production partners, and you know, and I think the best relationships with clients are the ones where you truly feel like they are your partner.
100%.
They're on your side, you're on their side, you've got each other's backs, you're doing it together.
Yeah.
Like that's when that, like, we're all making this together.
Yeah, because you all want the same outcome. You want the best work. So why would you not do that in a way that is together? And it's so important. And we have quite a lot of sort of junior talent who listen to our pod. And I always like to ask people, if there's a sort of specific piece of advice that you would give to someone entering the industry or sort of climbing the ranks in the industry?
Well, I think that the thing, your original question was, when did you first think you were talented?
Yes.
And I very much felt that for the first, I mean, quite a long time in my own career, I was not even sure of my own talents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the thing that I want young people coming into the industry to feel is that, you know, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And because believing that you are able to do this is how you actually end up doing it.
Yeah.
Second guessing yourself is, you are truly your own worst enemy in if you're in a place where you don't believe that you can do something.
Mm-hmm.
So freeing people up from that self-doubt to just like let their minds go, create. Honestly, I am that creative director. Just have fun with it.
Yeah.
Like I really, really believe that. That's the thing that I think, if you can get in touch with whatever it is that puts you in that place where the ideas are flowing, the ideas are coming, whatever you need to do to get you there, that's like, find that thing. And it won't be the same thing for everyone. Some people, you know, it won't be the same thing for everyone. It'll be like some people might find that through, you know, through, I don't know, through hikes, through watching great movies, through reading good books, like,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is that you need to do to get yourself there, find it and then, enjoy it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a lot of people, again, feel like they have to be like solely focused on advertising and on career and on everything that's going to feed into the success of that. When it like goes back to your improv and comedy writing and things, it's like actually take yourself away from that. Because if you're consistently in that headspace of consistently thinking about that, then you're going to get burnt out from it.
So yeah, and like that's what works for me. Like I like having this other kind of outlet, but that doesn't mean that that has to be like, I'm kind of not into this idea that everybody has to have a side hustle.
No.
Like I think that's kind of like a bit relentless and like, oh my God, enough.
Yeah, it's just
like
more
great
workload.
If you have a great side hustle, good for you.
Yeah.
But it's not like, that's not a mandatory. But I do think that everybody needs to find something that just feeds them.
100%. Like if that's having a bath in the evenings or if it's reading a book or watching a film, I hate the sort of side hustle culture that is now being bred. I love to hate it because it's like, I think it's the pressure to also then be succeeding in your career and also succeeding in a
your
side hustle
life?
And then also having time to see all your friends and family and partners and then having time to do everything else. I'm like, how am I supposed to do this?
Yeah, your side hustle can be Netflix and taking care of your family.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Exactly.
But the thing is that I think that, like, to your point about, you know, finding another headspace, like, I think that feeding yourself with other things outside of work, you know, you can very easily think that, you know, the job is answering the briefs, getting the, you know, getting the work done. And it is that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also like, the more you expose yourself to other things, that feeds into your work and the better your work is. So as hard as it is, it's so important to find, you know, whatever it is, like time within your week, your life to kind of put new, it's like, I always think of it as like inputs and outputs.
Yeah.
It's so functional, but that's really how I think of it. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm feeling like I can't come up with something or I'm stuck, I was like, oh, I need more inputs. And then you go watch something and you go do something, you go see something, or you like even just like get out into nature or do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That those are all great inputs and they affect the output.
Yeah. I listened to a panel talk last week and it was Lindsay Atkin from 4Creative.
Mm-hmm.
And she was speaking about how we are so lucky to be surrounded with so much culture in the form of art and music and film, and especially with, like, thank God, finally art house film being much more mainstream. And she was speaking about how we're so privileged that we can immerse ourselves into those environments and input different things that is then actually going to really impact the work in a positive way and be able to like touch different audiences for different reasons because you're pulling from different references. And I just thought it's something that feels so obvious when it's said to you, but it's something that you don't really consider until someone sits on a panel and says it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so interesting to listen to.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I moved to London. Mm. This is the best city in the world for that. I think it's we are so lucky to have everything minutes away. And also you think about there's art culture happening at many, many different levels, and you can think, oh, it's really expensive, but there's so much happening at all kinds of levels that you can, if you want to do something, if you want to see something, if you're interested in something, people here are doing it.
Yeah.
And you'll find other people that want to do it and ways to learn and find out about it. It's the best city in the world for that. And that's why I wanted to move here and why, 13 years later, I'm still here. 14 years later, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, I couldn't imagine living anywhere else.
Yeah, it's strange. I've been here for just over 5 years now. And I think only in the past couple, I've actually utilized being in London for that reasons.
Yeah.
And seeing different art shows and just going and being able to switch off and take in different things.
Yeah.
Now I'm finally oh, I get it. This is why I'm staying here, which is good.
Exactly.
I think we've come to the end of that. So thank you so much for coming in and chatting. It's been really interesting. And I'd love to hear more about your journey and wish you the best of luck with AMV as well.
Thanks, Molly. Thanks for having me in.